Hey, and welcome to Achieve Your Impossible with Ethan Taylor. I'm very excited. This is the first podcast actually that I've ever done, not only just on this show, but ever. We have a great guest for you today, and I can't wait to get started. Achieve Your Impossible, the podcast, is really all about highlighting people who overcome challenges or obstacles in their lives, whether that be personally or professionally, to be able to achieve their goals and their dreams. And really what I hope that you can gain from this is, no matter what situation you're in, it's never too late to start pursuing your dreams. Make sure to set those dreams high. Don't limit yourselves. And I'm hoping that through the people that I interview and highlight in this podcast, you can find some inspiration to start achieving your impossible as soon as possible. My guest today is Taylor McNutt. I've had the pleasure of knowing Taylor her whole life. She is my cousin. I'm super proud of her. In 2017, she graduated from Ohio University with a degree in integrated media production, focusing on video production, and also studied film and interpersonal relations, which I find fascinating. For a little while after school, she worked in and around her hometown in social media marketing for small businesses as she was saving money to head out to LA. So eventually she saved up enough money. She went out to LA and worked part-time as a production coordinator for a small company, eventually project manager for an advertising agency. And now as of October, she works in influencer relations, which is a sweet title. And one of the reasons I want to have Taylor on is because I think she did something that was incredibly rare and super inspirational. So Taylor left to go out to LA, originally from Southwest Ohio, moved out to Los Angeles because she believed in her dream. She didn't have a job out there. She didn't know anybody other than her roommates, and she just made the leap. She said, you know what, I believe in myself. I believe what I'm setting out to do. I'm going to be successful at it, and she made this ultimate leap. I spent 3 years in Texas doing a PhD. I remember going to Texas and being absolutely terrified, and I had a job set up. I was married at the time, all those sorts of things, and I was still terrified. And yet she made this leap really without a safety net. And I think that's so inspirational, and I cannot wait for you to hear her story. Taylor, thank you so much for taking the time to join me. I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you for having me. I am excited to be here.
So we'll just kind of start from the beginning. You know, what kind of inspired your leap to LA? What made you say, you know what, I'm ready for this, I'm going to go for it?
Okay. Well, I just always knew that I wanted to go to LA. I don't know why. I think mostly because I knew it would be the hardest place for me to go. And I knew I needed to try it. Otherwise, like, I was going to regret it. So after college, I knew I didn't want to stay in Ohio. And I was really in between moving to Nashville, moving to LA, and like New York was kind of thrown around, but then I realized it was definitely between Nashville or LA. And in my head, I knew that I loved Nashville. And I had never been to LA before. And Nashville's so much closer. And I knew my gut was like, you should go to Nashville, but like something wouldn't like let me do it. So one day, me and my parents, I folded up a bunch of papers that said Nashville and one that said LA. And I made us all draw the papers out of the little hat, and I was like, okay, if there's like two of one place, I'll go to that one. And they all said Nashville. I drew Nashville, my mom drew Nashville, and my dad drew Nashville. And I was like, all right, I gotta go to LA. And like in that moment, I knew that I at least had to try it. So I booked a flight to visit for the first time, and I only went for like 2 or 3 days with a friend. And I posted on my Instagram story, who wants to live in LA with me? And somebody responded like, I don't, but I know somebody out there that needs a roommate. She went to OU, which is where I went to school. So I drafted up a really long, anxious message being like, hey, you don't know me, but I really want to move to LA. Maybe like your timeline like lines up with you needing a roommate and me needing a roommate. And the girl was like, yeah, sure, that works. I'll look for apartments. And so then I was moving. Then I was moving to LA, and I texted my mom, like, I have a roommate, so I have to start figuring this out. And I think that was in, like, June when I messaged her, and then I moved that October.
That's insane. Like, I hear a lot about people who are like, oh, you know, you should flip a coin, and when you flip a coin, like how you feel about how the coin lands tells you what you really want. And it sounds like you kind of had that experience when you were drawing from the hat, when everything said Nashville and your gut was just like, no, it's LA. It's always been LA.
Yeah. And I think the thing about it was not that like I really wanted LA more. Like I know that I like Nashville a lot. And like, I know I would have been really happy there, but I almost felt like more scared that I could see myself like staying in Nashville forever if I picked there. And I was like, I have to do LA at some point in my life. And like it being the harder option sounded like more appealing to me for some reason. I was like, I have to do it. I don't want to just go where I know I'm going to be happy. Like I want to kind of push myself a little bit. And like, I was 24 at the time and I was like, this is the best time to like go to LA to try it out because I'm still so young. And if I get out there and it's not where I'm supposed to be, I can pick up and move and I can go to Nashville or places that I know that I'm going to love. But like, I would have like really felt like I was doing myself a disservice if I didn't at least see if I loved LA. So I worked and I saved up money while living in Ohio. Up until I felt like I had a good enough chunk saved, and we picked out our apartment. And the craziest thing is we had picked out our apartment, we got the lease in over, and it was me, the girl that I messaged on Instagram, Madison, and then we had a mutual friend from Ohio University as well who wanted to move with us. And the three of us picked this apartment, got the lease in over, I put my 2 weeks in, I had my last day of work, I packed up everything, and I was getting ready to leave that weekend. This was maybe on Wednesday of the week I was moving. And the guy who sent the lease over withdrew the lease and said that he was no longer interested in renting our apartment to us.
Oh my gosh.
And I texted the group. They were like, well, maybe we just wait until like next month. And I was like, unfortunately, like I've already put my 2 weeks in. My whole life is packed up. Like my mom's taken her days off work. Like I've already like, I'm moving this weekend. What do you think we can do? And Madison, who was already in LA at the time living in a different apartment, was like, I'll find us an apartment. And I started driving down and I signed the lease to my apartment the third day into my drive down. So like I drove down without even having an apartment there.
Oh my gosh. that makes the story even better. Like, I mean, I can't even, if it were me, I would have pulled the ripcord. I'm like, you know, it's not meant to be. I'm not doing it. I'm terrified. Nope. Sorry. Thanks. But
you know, the universe might've been trying to tell me that, but I was really fighting the universe at that point. I was like, we are going to LA. And my mom was driving down with me. And I don't know why. I was never anxious about not having an apartment. Like, I knew I was going to get one. But I think my mom was, like, a little bit freaking out. Like, I was on the phone with a notary halfway through our drive trying to get my lease, like, notarized. Like, just in the car.
Yeah.
24 hours into the drive. And I was like, well, we've got it. And I had, like, no idea really where the apartment was. I had only gotten videos from my roommate. But it was fine.
That's a great concept to me. You mentioned you felt like you were fighting the universe, but you knew it, something internally, you just knew that the apartment was going to work out. And so like, it's so interesting to me that you're like, okay, I'm fighting this thing. But even though you felt like you were fighting it, it seems like you kind of knew it was on your side. Like it was going to work out. You're going to come through stronger and better because of that.
Yeah. There was something weird about the move to LA where I had like no nerves. Like I was sad about saying goodbye, especially to my niece and my nephew.
Mm-hmm.
And like I was like sad about leaving my family in like Ohio, but there was like no nerves. Like I just felt the whole time like it's gonna be fine, it's gonna work out. So like even when I didn't have an apartment, I did feel a little silly like texting my friends and stuff when they'd be like, oh, so where's your apartment? And I'd be like, well, I don't have any. They're like, you're in Nevada. And I'm like, but it's gonna be okay. Like I felt like I was like trying to prove myself to people like it was really fine, but like I wasn't proving it to myself. I knew that it was gonna be okay. And then I got there and I got this cute apartment and I ended up loving my roommates. So it definitely worked out for the best once I got there.
When you decided to first go out to LA, I don't really remember much about that time because I was away at the time. But from my standpoint, whenever I like get ready to start a new project or something and I'm nervous about it, I tell everybody I'm going to do it because I feel like then I have to do it. Otherwise, like all these people are like, oh, well, Ethan just runs his mouth and he doesn't do anything. So like it pushes me to make that jump. LA was for you. Did you like tell a bunch of people, be like, if I tell people, then I have to go, I have to try it? Or what was kind of that process for you?
100%. I feel like I had been talking about probably going to LA since graduating. And then I kind of settled down, like, back at home in my parents' house in Ohio. And I got a job. And I think that was a big part of, like, the move, too. Like, I had told so many people that's where I wanted to be. And, like, I knew there was nothing wrong with, like, moving home and living with your parents and, like, doing any of that stuff. But in my head, like, it's just not where I wanted to be. Mm-hmm. So I was like, ugh, like, I have to get out of here. I cannot stay living with my parents. I need to move. And I was telling all of these people I was going to move to California. And it kept, like, getting pushed back and pushed back. And I was like, it can't keep getting pushed back because I'm worried people are thinking that I'm just saying I'm moving to move. And, like, I don't think anybody was looking at it that way. I think everybody I knew I was going to move to California. But in my head, I was like, they all think that I'm not really going to do it. I have to do it. And I remember I went up to Columbus for, like, a goodbye party for myself, like, with my friends. And then, like, the move got pushed back a week. So I ended up going back up the next weekend. And I was like, they're just thinking, like, I'm never really going to do it. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, you guys, we have to move. And so that's why I really pushed, like, for that timeline. And I kind of knew one of my roommates was a little bit, like, I think second guessing the move. He was also in Ohio, and he was, like, the mutual friend that we had. And I could tell he was totally fine pushing it back. And I was like, if it's up to anybody else, like, in this group, she's already, like, got an apartment in LA, and he doesn't really feel like he needs to move. So, like, nobody was really pushing for it to really happen. And I was like, I have to be the one, or else I think we could probably sit on this for a while until it might not happen. So I was like, you guys, we have to just pull the trigger. We have to move. We have to do this. And I'm, like, so glad that I pushed for it, for sure.
Yeah, it, I mean, I think from listening to, like, some other people in terms of actors and comedians and people in that sort of work, they kind of have a similar thing to what you were describing, in that a lot of them will say, I'm always afraid that, like, that's my last gig. I've done my last thing. Even though I'm working all the time, I'm always like, this is the last thing I'm going to do. And, like, you know, everybody's waiting for me to slip up or whatever. And so, kind of like how you were saying, you think people realize that you were going to go eventually, you're going to make that big leap. But in your head, you were like, you know, they don't think we want to do it. They don't think we want to do it. And it seems like with people who are high achieving, they do set these big goals. They're the ones that are always in their head. Like, am I doing enough? Am I not going to do it? Like, that's where the kind of self-doubt comes from. And it motivates you, as it did in your move, to do more, to push harder, to make whatever you're dreaming, whatever you envision in your head, make that become your reality.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like I'm my biggest, like, self-doubter, for sure. And I think I was, like, projecting what I was thinking. Like, I think I was more worried that I probably, like, maybe I won't move. And I was, like, projecting it onto people that probably weren't thinking that at mm-hmm. all. But I'm definitely always trying to, I don't know the right way to put it. I guess, like, I'm, like, fighting myself on things. Like, I'm like, I have to do it. I have to get out there. And I try to really overcome those things, because I know I'd be so disappointed in myself if I didn't do the things.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that too, that earlier when you were saying that you felt like that LA was the bigger challenge. You could go to Nashville and be perfectly happy, but it seemed like if you had just gone to Nashville and said, okay, well, this is where I'm going to make my life, there was always going to be a part of you that kind of wondered, like, could I have done LA? Could I have made it out in LA? And now, you know that you're going to make it.
Yeah, for sure. There's something, I think, to be said about, like, being content. And I feel like one day I'll really want that mm-hmm. for sure. But right now, like, just being content and staying somewhere was not what I wanted to do. I was like, I don't want to just pick the place I'm going to be for the rest of my life. I think if I end up in Nashville, I'd stay there. And, like, I want to do all of my exploring and all of my challenging things right now. So LA was definitely the right move for me at the time. And I feel like I've learned a lot since being out there, especially I moved in October, and by March, everything was locked down. So it's been a challenging first year of moving to, like, a big new area all by myself.
Yeah. I couldn't imagine that. I mean, LA was one of the first places that shut down. And so, mm-hmm. so when everything shut down, that was kind of my first thought, was like, oh my gosh, Taylor just moved out to LA. And of course, like, what you're wanting to do with all your media work, a lot of those industries were getting shut down too. So that had to be absolutely terrifying for you.
Yeah. And I'm not always the most responsible person. I like am just recently realizing that that's something that I have to kind of prioritize. Mm-hmm. So when I moved, I was like, well, I'm going to spend the first 3 months just exploring. I'm not going to look for a job. Like, I really want to get used to living in LA. Like, I don't want to just like throw myself into work. Which in hindsight, knowing that the world was going to shut down so quickly, that was maybe not my best move. But at the time, I had no idea that was going to happen. So I was just like exploring, and it was really hard because my roommate worked. The guy roommate, his name's Pat, he ended up not moving down until much, much later. So it was just me and Madison for a while. And she was at work, so I explored like by myself every single day for like maybe 2 months. And I just like went on hikes and went to different places, all of the museums that I wanted to see, all of the restaurants I wanted to eat at. And then after I felt like I really got the hang of it, I was like, okay, I have to get a job, which proved to be a little harder than I thought out in LA. And so the job search took a little while, which is when I ended up as the production coordinator for like a small commercial production company out there. It was a super sweet, like, first job. They were so kind. It was so great. But there just wasn't a lot happening, and they knew I was, like, looking to get a full-time job. So in February, they pulled me in their office, and they were like, we have really bad news, but not that bad of news. And they were like, we can't hire you full-time, and we know you can't keep working part-time out here. But the creative agency that we had left to start this company is looking for a project manager, and we put, like, your name in, and we set up an interview for you. Do you want to take it? And I was like, I would love to. Thank you so much. And they're like, okay, it's today at 2:00. And I was like, what? And they were like, yes. And like, this is 11 o'clock right now.
Oh my gosh.
The thing about LA is it's so spread out. So I'm working pretty far south in El Segundo. And I had like maybe a 45 minute drive up to Culver City for this next interview, which mind you is maybe like 16 miles at best. And it's going to take me like 50 minutes to get there. So it's really frustrating. And this is a super laid back job, so I'm not dressed to
an interview.
I'm like in panic mode. They're like prepping me for this interview, and I'm so nervous. And I was like, they're like, okay, well, go. And I was like, oh, okay. Fly. Thank you so much. I really appreciate this, but also like, could you maybe have texted me last night? Like, you knew you were gonna say this today. But I went in and I had such a great interview with this guy. His name was Andrew. And he's like, okay, I want to set up an interview for you with his boss, who was like the account executive for the team that I was interviewing for. And they were like, can you come back tomorrow? And I was like, yes. And at the end of this interview, he gave me like a list of words to make sure I said in my interview the next day. He's like, I really want you to get this job. Jim is going to look for these words when he interviews you. Make sure you say them.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, okay. Thank you so much.
That's amazing.
And then I get an email from the HR director, Denise. She's like the best person in the world. She's like, can you come in 15 minutes early before your interview? I want to talk to you. And she literally sat down and looked over my resume and called out every single thing that he was going to think was a concern. And she's like, I just want you to be ready when he's like concerned, because I was interviewing for a project management position for this creative agency, but it was for the print team. Mm. And my background's like a lot of video and like integrated media. And she's like, he is going to be really concerned that like, you don't want to be in this position. So like, I just want you to be ready. He is going to like, it's going to be a tough interview. And then she gave me the same words to say. She's like, you need to make sure you say these though, because he's going to look for it. And I was like, so now I'm in this interview and I'm just overthinking, trying to figure out how to get like accountability and ownership in there. And like, I'm just sitting there like, yeah, you know, I really do like having ownership of my own team. Like, I really like to be held accountable for my own actions. And I'm like sitting there like, this is going so unnaturally. And I make everything so uncomfortable. And I think sometimes it works in my benefit. Like, he asked me to sell him like a birthday card. And I was like, do we sell birthday cards here? And he's like, well, no. And I was like, well, then how do you even know what I should be asking? And he's like, well, that's a really good point. And I was like, could you ask me something that we do sell here? And he's like, I could. Yeah, hold on. Okay. And I was like, okay. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry, sir. But it turns out that it went fine somehow. And the next day they offered me the job. And I was like, oh my gosh, what a whirlwind. I went from like having a job, losing a job, getting an interview, to having a full-time job. All in the matter of like week. It was so overwhelming. But that's how I ended up there. And I started, I guess, the very beginning of March. That wouldn't make sense. I've probably started the very beginning of February. Mm-hmm. And I worked for the print media team there. And it was great. Our only like client that I worked with was Yokohama Tires, which was definitely an adjustment because I know nothing about tires. So I was like, it was a learning curve because I had to learn everything about the product as well as print media.
Oh my goodness. That's a lot to learn all at once.
Yeah. And I think I had 2 weeks working there and then everything got locked down. So I immediately went from like learning everything to learning everything at home at the very beginning of a pandemic when like everybody I think was like learning how to live through that. Cause I was like scared and I was anxious and I was in LA and I kept having these like fears that for some reason I would get like stuck in LA and I wouldn't be able to go back home to Ohio because like nobody really knew what was happening.
Yeah, because at that time they were shutting down flights and things, right?
Yeah, Trevor, my brother, your cousin, yes, for all of you listening, was actually visiting the last week. Like he visited my second week of my job, which was a little bit stressful because I just had to like throw him into the wind and be like explore during the day. Like we'll hang out at the end, like when I get off work. And so it was like a really big, just like a lot was changing for me. He got there and then like everything started talking about like COVID. All of the things we had plans to do like while he was visiting started shutting down. And then we started thinking like, can he even fly back home? Like what is even going to happen? I thought maybe Trevor was going to be stuck in LA. Jeez. Luckily we got him out of there. But then I was like, am I stuck in LA? And I'm pretty anxious, like, regularly. So I was, like, checking my temperature every 5 seconds. So I was, like, it was just a lot. And learning a new job and learning a new, like, field altogether was a lot.
I mean, and but at that point in time, we didn't really understand COVID. I mean, COVID is still very serious. But at the time, you're thinking the world's going to end, right? Like, I mean, we've never experienced a pandemic or economic shutdowns or anything like that. So to you at that time, the world probably is ending.
Yeah, I definitely thought it was ending. And I've never been so far away from my home, like, of Ohio for so mm-hmm. long, like, in, like, a serious, like, I knew, like, I was actually living in LA. And I was like, oh, my gosh, well, if, like, the world really does shut down, I'd rather be, like, at home with my family. And then I had just gotten this job, which, like, I so desperately, like, desperately needed to stay in LA because, like I said, I explored for a really long time in the beginning and I was running out of my savings. And I was like, I don't even know if I'll keep this job. Like, I have no idea. And I was so anxious because I was trying so hard to be so good at this job, but there was such a learning curve to it with everything going on that like, I was so hard on myself and I was worried like every single day that I was messing up or that like, I wasn't like holding myself to like a high enough standard that like they were looking for. And I was like, so scared at all times that I was just going to get a phone call that I was going to lose my job.
Yeah.
So it was crazy.
You know, imposter syndrome is so real. And I think like, you know, when you get in that situation to where you're like, am I doing enough? Am I doing everything right? So much harder. And then once you do, you kind of feel like you're making more mistakes because you're trying harder, which is a terrible cycle in itself that the harder you try, the more like you kind of make mistakes. But I think that just kind of shows how much you want to succeed and be successful. Though no matter what you do, you're like, oh, is it enough? Like, could I be better? How can I be better?
Definitely. And I think what was really hard was, one, print media is kind of a dying media at this point. You know, it's not, people aren't really marketing themselves so much in like magazines and newspapers and things anymore. Right now, it's like such a digital age. So we were really, really slow as well. But as a project manager, like my job was to look at all of the like art that comes in from our art directors and our studio heads and to make all of the edits and like route them over to our account executive for his edits. And like everything came through me before it reached like our executive or our clients or anything. And it was so slow that like not a lot was coming in. And I just felt like I wasn't ever really doing anything. And I was like, as a project manager, if we didn't have projects, there was nothing for me to do like on my own time. So I was just literally waiting for things to come to me and they just like weren't. So I constantly felt like, am I missing something? Am I doing something wrong? Or do I just not have anything to do? And I'm not good with not having things to do. Like, that doesn't make me feel very successful. I'm like, I felt like I was doing a bad job, but really we were just so slow, which also scared me because I was like, I don't want to not have a job. I want us to make like more, like I wanted us to get more business and like bring more clients in and stuff, but like it just wasn't happening, especially during the first lockdown. Nobody's really like marketing themselves, and they're definitely not doing it in through print media. Like, who's getting like any, like everything's like strictly like digital social media marketing, like maybe commercials, but it was such a slow, like stagnant workplace for me that I was like really struggling throughout the beginning of like lockdown with this job for sure.
Before we continue down this path so much, offline we kind of talked a little bit about how like right before you kind of found a job, initially you were kind of looking to leave LA potentially. What made you stay until you found your job? Like what was kind of like your breaking point where you're like, if I get to this point, I have to leave?
Well, so that came a little bit after this.
I got my timeline mixed up. I'm sorry.
No, but this is good because this leads us in to the next point. So I was working this job and I was really grateful and appreciative of it for sure. But I could tell it wasn't where I was supposed to be. Like, I didn't go to school for that. Like, my passion wasn't behind this job whatsoever. And I was like really hard on myself throughout this whole job. And then one June day, so I had worked from March all the way through June. Like, the pandemic was starting to feel like more normal, unfortunately, I guess. Like, I was finding my way. I was working. Everything was okay. And I woke up and I had a text from my dad. And he texted me, well, and the whole family. Cheryl, which is my mother, is on the way to the hospital. Don't be alarmed. Which is so alarming.
Certainly,
like,
yeah.
Roger. Come on. And I'm so anxious. Like, I really do struggle with anxiety pretty regularly. And I'm in California. And my head always goes to the worst place. Like, and he said she has a headache. And in my head, I was like, she has a brain aneurysm. And I called my dad and I said, does she have a brain aneurysm? And he's like, we took her to the like urgent care near us and they've decided they're going to transfer her over to like Miami Valley Hospital. And I was like, her brain's bleeding. I know it because I had been to that same exact like urgent care ER with a headache because I'm overdramatic and anxious. And I thought I had a brain aneurysm and they were like, you have a migraine. And I was like, I've never had one of these before. This is horrible. And then I had to stay there for migraine and I felt stupid because my mom kept telling me it was just a migraine. But I knew if she just had a migraine, she would stay at that place. And I knew in my head, like I felt it in my gut that she had a brain bleed for some reason. And I'm calling my dad and I could tell that he was super anxious. And he's like, I don't know, Taylor, like I'm going to the hospital. I'll let you know when I know anything. And I'm sobbing, like running around like a crazy person, telling my roommate, like, I think I need to fly home. I think I need to fly home. I think something's wrong. And like, I was letting my emotions get the best of me. Luckily, my roommate Madison is an angel. And before I could even like get myself all together, she had already bought me a flight home for like the next, like in the next 2 hours. Luckily, she knows all of my information and she could buy it. She was on the phone with one of my friends from Ohio and like, we're figuring out what like airport I should fly into and everything. So it was like super great. And it was so scary because no one was telling me anything. And I know they thought that was helpful, but like being in California, I felt so helpless and I was so stressed. And I like got myself into such a low place that like I started packing stuff in case I had to go to a funeral.
Oh gosh.
And then I thought, don't do that. You can't put that into the world. Like, you're not going to do that. If you have to do that, you can get clothes when you're home, but like, you're not going to prepare for that. So I was ripping it out, taking all of like my nice clothes out of my suitcase. I don't even know what I had in my suitcase, but it was not things that I could keep wearing. I maybe brought like one pair of pants home and 17 sweatshirts, but I am like sobbing. And then my dad finally tells me that she did have a brain aneurysm, but she's like getting taken back into emergency surgery. And so I just got on a flight home and I bought Wi-Fi because my dad told me he would text me when she was out. But the whole plane ride, I was just like, I was just like beyond myself. I didn't even know. I think everybody on the flight thought I was insane. I was like sobbing. And then he texted me at the end of my first 5-hour flight and said, she's out of surgery. It's going to be okay. But like, I didn't believe him. I was like, he would tell me that just so I'm not panicking on the flight. Yeah. So like, that text didn't make me feel better whatsoever. And then I had to get on my next flight. And luckily, it was only like 45 minutes. And then my older brother, Ryan, picked me up and kind of like explained everything. He's like, she is okay. I know you didn't believe Dad. And I was like, I didn't. And he was like, but it was like a pretty bad brain aneurysm. But she's like stable. She's out of surgery. And like the doctors think she's going to be fine, which was like great. But like, I still didn't feel relieved for some reason.
Yeah.
And so.
Yeah. I mean, oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No, you go ahead.
Hearing you tell that story just gives me chills, because I've never heard your side of the story. When all this is going on, Trevor and I are on the beach. I mean, we just landed in Florida, and we were out swimming and just kind of talking about, you know, what was going on in his life and stuff. And I remember us coming up on the beach, and I won't share too much because it's Trevor's story, not mine. But I remember him being like, Taylor tried to call me a whole bunch of times. And like instantly I was worried. I'm like, oh, that's weird. Why would it, like, if you were calling just to talk, you would call and leave a message. Like, there wouldn't be a whole bunch of times. And I just remember like listening to his voice and knowing instantly that something was wrong, and like frantically trying to find a flight and get back to the airport, and just like him, Trevor being Trevor, that when he's like stressed or upset, just rambling about all sorts of stuff. And so I'm just silent, letting him talk. And it was such a scary situation.
Yeah, I felt really bad because I didn't even know Trevor was in Florida. And so I knew that like I was panicky, and the only thing I can do is like try to get more information or talk to somebody. And I knew calling my dad was probably not the most helpful for him. So I was like, I'm going to call Trevor and like maybe he'll calm me down. But I had no idea he was in Florida. So I called him like 100 times, not really, but probably like 9 times, and he didn't answer. And I texted him like, you need to come home, thinking he was in Columbus, and that coming down to Dayton would have been like a, you know, hour and a half trip at best. And then he called me and he's like, what's going on? I just saw like all of your calls. And I was like, are you not reading the group message like with Dad? And he was like, no. And I was like, I think Mom had a brain aneurysm, which is probably not the best thing to say as I'm like hysterically sobbing. And I actually didn't know at that point. I was just like gut feeling it. And he's like, I was like, so are you going to go home? He's like, yeah, I'm going to go home right now. And I was like, okay. Well, I'm getting like, I'm on my way to the airport. Please text me like once you get home and like, let me know what you find out. And he's like, well, I'll probably get home around the same time as you. And I was like, you're in Columbus. And he's like, I'm in Florida. I literally landed in Florida 2 hours ago. And then
You called, we hadn't been in the water, I would say, but 5 or 10 minutes. So like we were that close to getting your first call. And I don't remember how long we'd been in the water, but I mean, goodness, he probably didn't call you back for what, like another half an hour, 45 minutes after your initial calls. It was insane.
Yeah. I mean, it took him so long because I had already run through like every single friend that I had, like called every single one of them. I had gotten my flight, packed my bags, told my work that like I had to go home and something was happening, and like I'd give them more information the next day. And then Trevor finally called me, and I was just like so flustered, and I didn't realize I was the first one to tell him anything. And like, looking back, I feel really bad, because to get bad news from somebody who's like hysterically sobbing and like being completely unhinged was probably way scarier than if I was just like, hey, bud, so I think you should go home.
Well, to be fair, you were kind of going through a lot at the time. So it stands to reason that you wouldn't like be like, oh, hey, Trev, just FYI, you should know. Like, I mean, I'm sure he understands.
I'm sure he does too. I'm just thinking like maybe Ryan or my dad, who was closer to the situation and who knew a little bit more and like had already like gone through probably their initial panic, would have been maybe like a better person to tell him. I felt really bad being the person to tell him. But then I'm glad that he got the call when he did and was able to come home, because we did get home like around the same time. And we both slept in the living room. I don't know why it felt so much safer to sleep in the living room together instead of like our separate beds upstairs. But like my dad was at the hospital, and Ryan came and stayed for a really long time with us and explained the situation, because he had already like been to the hospital and seen my mom. And Trevi and I just like both slept on a couch, like probably didn't sleep, because I don't think either one of us was going to believe that she was okay until we like saw her, because like they said she was fine, but you also don't really know because she was still like under and like unconscious and on like a bunch of meds. So it was like you're still trying to figure out like what she can do and if she's.
Do you need occupational therapy, physical therapy? What all is required?
Yeah.
Now that we're kind of on this path, I think a lot of people might not be in that specific situation, but people who are dealing with loved ones that have cancer or other emergencies that arrive. How did you guys handle the hospital situation? Because at that point, only one person was in per day, right? I mean, it wasn't like the whole family could go in and be with her.
Yeah, this was definitely something we had to really like strategically plan out. And I think we did it in the best way possible. So my dad had come back that next morning and explained that it was like one person per day, but he thought that we would probably be able to have one person during the day and then one person do like a night shift. Like, and so we were like, okay. And he said that I could go the first day because I was like coming from California and we just realistically didn't know like when I'd have to go back for work or what. So he wanted to make sure I was able to go. And I like made sure that Trevor was okay with that. And he was like, yeah, that's fine. And so the first day was my day. And I walked in and she was still on oxygen and all like wired up. And it was like, so
yeah, I can't imagine.
Weird. And I didn't know what to do. And I didn't know if she'd like even like be able to talk to me. But for some reason, like when I walked in, I felt weird, but like I felt okay. Like I wasn't like overwhelmingly like sad or like overcome with emotions. Like I could tell that like she was there and like it was okay. And she was definitely out of it. And she came in and like she could kind of talk, and she had her occupational therapist come in and was like, we're gonna try to get you to see if you can like walk, see like how you can do. And this is when I knew she was gonna be okay, because she said, no, I don't want to do that. And I said, Mom, what? And she's like so groggy and so sleepy. And they were like, we have to see if you can do that. And she's like, I'm a nurse. It's fine.
I was about to throw that detail out there. And so if now you were going to, she was a nurse. Or is a nurse, yeah.
She is a nurse. Which is horrible because it makes her like really stubborn when it comes to these things. And she's like out of it and she can't like fully really like speak all of the way yet or anything, and she's still like being so sassy. And I was just sitting there like, oh, God, man, just stand up. Like, one, we have to see if you can walk. Like, two, oh my gosh. And so like she did, she like got a walker, and she like little like groggily like was saw that she like still had like movement, like control and everything. So they let her lay back down, and then she was pretty much like out for the rest of the day. And it was like weird to see her like that. But I knew she was still in there because she's being feisty, like the two words she said. And so my dad came back that night. He was going to take all of the night shifts. And like Trevor and I were going to alternate days. But apparently my parents were redoing our floors at the time in like our living room and kitchen area. Or they were getting ready to start it like that weekend before after the aneurysm happened. And my mom like made a one-off comment about how nice it would be to come home to the floors done. And my dad, I think just trying to cope with everything, took that and ran with it. So he came back the next morning and was like, Trevor, we're going to redo the whole house. Mom wants the floors done by the time she gets home. And like, I've talked to my mom since, and she doesn't even remember saying that comment. But my dad was like, this is what we have to do. So Trevor and Ryan and my dad, for like 2 weeks that she was in the ICU, ripped up all of our floors, redid the whole house. Like I painted all of the trim and all of like our columns in our house the one day that I wasn't in the hospital. But because of that comment, I ended up getting put on hospital duty every single day. And the boys redid the whole house. And so I think it was good that I was there though, because my mom is very stubborn. And as she started to get more coherent and like everything, she was still on like a lot of medication for pain, and she was like getting like CAT scans and stuff to make sure that the surgery, they coiled her brain to like clog like the bloodstream and like be able to clot it and stuff. And so she had like a lot still going on, and she was in ICU for 2 weeks up on like the neuro ward. But as she started to get better, she started to get more frustrating, because like I would know she was at like an 8 level of pain, and then she would tell the nurse that she was fine and that she wouldn't need her medicine yet. And then, like, by the time she did need her medicine, she was, like, in excruciating pain. And I know Trevor would have just been walked all over by her. And I was like, Mom, like, you can't do that. So I was, like, chasing nurses down the hallway being like, she's lying to you. You need to give her your medicine right now. She's saying she can wait, but, like, she can't. And so I think it was good that I was there because Trevor would have just been like, yeah, Mom, whatever.
He's a very people-pleasing person, Trevor is.
He will
do anything for anybody.
And I knew that I needed to be there. Really throw my
this was the moment you'd been waiting for. Teenage Taylor is like, finally, I have you where I want you.
That's what I thought, but I found out parenting your mom is exhausting. Let me tell you. It made me feel bad for all the time she had to parent me because I could see how similar we were in some instances. Mm-hmm. But so I think it was good that I was able to be there, and then I got to like see her start to like come back to herself. And then she was there for 3 weeks, and then she finally was able, like, she was there in the ICU for 2 weeks, and then she transferred to a step down unit, and then she was able to come home, and she had a full recovery. So it was honestly a miracle. They said if one like step of the way went any different, if my mom didn't call my dad when she did, or if my dad didn't call the ambulance because my mom didn't want to be taken in an ambulance, and if they didn't get there when they did, and if my mom ended up getting care flighted from the ER to the hospital, which my dad didn't even know until he got to the hospital, but like if they didn't choose the ER and if my dad or the care flight and if my dad didn't choose the exact hospital that he did, like that neurosurgeon was on call and there was an OR open, so they said like one step of the way went any differently and like she would have not been here today. So it was like seriously nothing short.
Yeah, the whole story is just amazing. I mean, for such a terrible situation, like you said, everything went exactly as it needed to the best result. I mean, people die from aneurysms all the time. And the fact that everything went perfectly for her full recovery and really a remarkable time. I mean, she recovered so quickly. It's just amazing.
It is crazy. Yeah, it was so great. And it was like really good to be able to see it. If I would have had to gone back to LA while she was still recovering, I think I don't know if I would have believed that she like recovered as well as she did. And so I'm like really glad that I was able to stay here throughout the whole hospital stay to like witness it for
definitely
myself.
Because I mean I don't think anybody like would believe that it happened as it did had they not experienced it firsthand. I mean, you would have every reason under the sun to think, oh well, she's not recovering this quickly or things didn't go that well. That was how perfectly they went.
Yeah. Seriously, like I'm a big believer in like things happening as they're supposed to happen and like when they're supposed to happen. And I feel like she was just exactly in the right place at the right time for so many incidences, like right there. Like it was just crazy how it worked out. And like I just know that like she was meant to still be here. And like I'm super glad because if it went any differently, I would probably 100% not be in LA right now still, or like it would have just like changed the whole path of so many things. Like that just would have been, I don't know what I would have done. I don't know what anybody would have done. So I'm just really,
I mean,
thankful.
It would have been such a life-changing moment. I'm so glad that you didn't have to go through that. I mean, as you know, I have a great relationship with your mom. I love her so much. And so, you know, of all the things that went bad in 2020, I'm so glad that that went right.
Me too. I mean, I could say that, like, I wish it didn't happen because it was so, so scary, but, like, it made me so much more, like, appreciative, like, for my family and, like, just for, like, so many things, for air travel and care flight and, like, our hospitals and, like, I don't know, like, and it was so great to see my dad, like, be so emotional about it. Like, he was the cutest in the whole world. Like, every night he'd be like, do you want to listen to your mom's song? And I'd go, sure. And, like, I had so many, like, good bonding moments with, like, so many people in my family, like, throughout all of it. So it's definitely something that, like, I wish my mom and, like, family didn't have to go through. But if we had to go through it, like, I'm glad it went this
And that was
way.
A great story with your dad when you're talking about how, like, your mom just made that one-off comment about having the floors done and how he was kind of like, I can't make her feel any better, but I can control this one thing. This is the one that, like, I'm going to do this one mm-hmm. thing as good as I can so that when she comes home, she can see it and be happy that it's done. That's a great story.
Yeah, I definitely think it definitely had a lot to do with control. Like, I think that's how he was coping, and it also made him feel like, I can do something. But, whew, there's a lot going on at this house. I was like, I'll go to the hospital. You guys, nope, yep, don't even worry about it. I'm going to go to the hospital.
So, while all this craziness is going on, what was going on in your workplace? Not too many workplaces would be like, oh, yeah, just take as much time as you want. Go and do whatever.
Yeah, so I have emailed them and said, like, I think this happened on a Thursday, if I remember correctly. So Friday,
We've landed. Okay. I was in Florida Thursday through Sunday, and it happened the first day of the trip.
So, yes, Thursday. So I remember emailing Friday and explaining the situation and being like, obviously, like, I'm going to need today off as well. But starting Monday, like, I will be in the hospital each day. She's pretty out of it. Like, there's not, like, going to be anything holding me back. I can work on, like, Pacific Standard Time. Like, I'm ready to get back to work while I, like, sit in the hospital. So just let me know, like, how to proceed. And they were like, please take next week off. Don't worry. Like, you can use your PTO. And I said, okay, great. Thank you. And then when that week was coming to an end and my mom was still, like, in the ICU and we knew she was going to be in the ICU for, like, the rest of the next week, I sent them an email and I was like, hey, I just want to let you know, like, my mom's still in the hospital. I would feel really comfortable if I could stay in Ohio while she's here. I know that you mentioned, like, last week that I could take my paid time off, but, like, I'm really, like, eager to get back to work.
Mm-hmm.
Please let me know. And they were like, unfortunately, we cannot have you working in Ohio as, like, other people who have gone out of state during, like, this time. We've made them use, like, their paid time or vacation days, but we'll give you this next week off too. We completely understand your situation, which I was super appreciative of, and I understand that, like, with the pandemic, everybody was, like, trying to figure out mm-hmm. their new normal, and, like, obviously we didn't need to be in the offices anymore, and, like, we weren't even allowed to be in the offices anymore, so, like, I kind of was, like, having a hard time understanding why I couldn't work and, like, what the difference was, like, with me being in Ohio. But I was, like, super grateful that they were continuing, like, to allow me to work or get paid while being back at home. But, like, I kind of knew I wanted to help my mom get, like, back into the house and, like, well adjusted, because my dad was still in his office. And I knew that there were going to be, like, days where he was going to have to go in and my mom wasn't supposed to be, like, left unsupervised. And, like, our grandma was going to come over a couple of days and, like, my sister-in-law. But, like, I really wanted to be there and make sure she was fine. So I was, like, getting a little anxious because I knew I was going to ask for another week. And so at the end of this week, I, like, sent an email and I was like, hey, I completely understand that you guys have, like, really gone above and beyond to giving me, like, these 2 weeks of PTO to use, which, like, I had not accumulated at that point. And I was like, but I explained the situation about wanting to help my mom move back in and, like, get acclimated. And I was like, I understand I probably cannot take this week off paid, but, like, I'm willing to take it off unpaid if you'll, like, allow it. However, like, I don't want to inconvenience, like, the company, so please let me know. And they were like, you can take it off, we'll still pay you. And I was like, wow, yeah, okay, thank you so much, like, I really, really appreciate it. And it was, like, a super emotional time. Like, I really, after that week, didn't want to go back to LA. It was, I don't know, I was, like, scared, and, like, I was still super emotional, and I don't really always acknowledge that, but, like, I knew I really didn't want to leave, and that, like, it was going to be a lot harder than I was thinking, even though I knew my mom was back home. But I was like, I have to go, like, I have to, like, pull the trigger on this eventually. So I went back to LA, and then that week I got furloughed because of COVID.
Just compounding the problem.
I don't want to have, like, any animosity, because the company was so great to me. But I was a little bummed because I feel like they had to have known that they were going to do that. And I really wished that they would have just been, like, told me. I know they probably didn't want to pile a lot of stuff on while I was at home. But I would have stayed home in that case. So I was like, whew, okay. So I was furloughed. I think like that probably was the last weekend of July. And they said that like I would get through the end of September to be like on furlough. But if like they didn't need me to come back to work and if like business didn't pick back up, like I would just have been completely let go. And the HR department like head Denise, she's really, really great. And she called me and she's like, I feel horrible. This is nothing personal. Like you just know your team is so slow. You're not the only one to be furloughed, but like nothing is happening. And we tried so hard to keep people on for as long as we can, mm-hmm. but we just cannot anymore. She was like, you will be like on like furlough. So if we need you to come back in the next 2 months, like you'll be directly back into like payroll and everything. And she's like, but I recommend you start looking for other jobs. And she was like, are you probably going to move back home to Ohio? And in my mind at that point, that hadn't even like been an idea. I just assumed I'd look for a new job in LA. And I was like, no, I don't think so. And she was like, oh, really? I assumed you'd move back home. And I was like,
that's not really cool. Why would I do that? Like, oh, I just figured you'd leave.
And I know. And I kind of felt like she thought like maybe that was going to make her feel better if I was like, yes, I'm going to go back home. But I was like, well, no, I'm going to stay in LA. Like at this point, I still, my lease was still going until October. But then she kind of planted that in my head. And as I was looking for a job and it was like getting increasingly harder, I realized like I'm kind of living beyond my means at this point in LA with no paycheck. And like by kind of, I mean extremely beyond my means. It was like becoming very, very hard. And then I started thinking like my lease is up in October. I feel like the universe is almost like telling me like you got furloughed. You can't find a job. You can't afford to live out here. Your lease is coming to an end. Like it's giving me all of the opportunities for an out. And in October, our lease could go month to month. And I knew that my roommates weren't ready to move. So I like told them my situation and I was like, I'm willing to like go month to month for a little bit. Just until like Christmas time. But I think like I'll probably end up moving back home afterwards. And I had planned to move back home, kind of get back on my feet. And I had already started applying to jobs in Nashville and even closer to home, just like in Ohio, just maybe to work for a little bit to like get my savings back in order and then be able to move and feel like really comfortable where I am. And I had applied to all of these jobs and I had two jobs that I was super far in the interview process for. And one was a video production company in Nashville and one was a video production company, but the position was remote, which I thought would be great. I could move back home. I was still like in this emotional, like, I don't know, like situation with my family. Like I really wanted to be close to them. And it just felt like the world was telling me to like, go back home, try again. And I knew one of these jobs I was going to get them. And I was interviewing for one place in LA and I did the interview and I thought it went so horribly. So I was like, it's whatever. And then I got a second interview for that job and I was still waiting to hear back from the other two places I was interviewing. And then I got the job offer at the very end of October for the job in LA. And it felt like the universe was just pulling me right back to LA again. And I was like, oh my gosh, I had just finally come to terms with me leaving LA. And so I got this offer and I looked at it and I thought like I had nothing to lose. I'm going to negotiate for more money. Because it was a good offer and it was fine. I was making more than I was going to, like I had been making at my previous job. But I just was like looking at it, like if I'm supposed to be in LA, then this job will give me like exactly what I need. And so I've never negotiated before in my life. And I don't know why, but I tried it and I asked for more money and they came back and they met me at what I That's asked awesome. For plus some. And I was like, okay,
I'm staying in LA. I heard the story initially secondhand, and when I had heard that you had asked for more money and negotiated, and that they gave you more money, I was so happy because a lot of studies show that women tend to not negotiate, not ask for raises as much, not negotiate as much, and so I was so happy to hear that you're like, you know what, I think I'm worth more, and you were successful in negotiating that. I think that's amazing.
Thank you. It was really intimidating. It's so scary. And I asked for a lot of advice. Yeah. And I knew people who had negotiated before and like they were all men. So I had asked one of my friend's boyfriends who's like super good at negotiating and just like professional business things in general. And I was like, what do you recommend? And he's like, well, how much do you need to feel comfortable? And I told him, and he was like, okay, well, you might as well do that. And then he like explained just like the way that like it works. Like, if I'm worth that much, like I might as well ask, because eventually like inflation and stuff, like I'll probably not be getting paid as much. I don't know. I didn't follow that part as well. And I was like, okay,
it's easier to get it now than later.
And I yes. And I was like, I'm going to do it. And the people that I interviewed with were both, I interviewed with two women the first time, and then the account executive, who was also like a woman, and they just seemed so powerful. Like, you could tell that like this team was just like made up of like really strong, independent women. And I knew in my head, I think that they would appreciate me asking for more. Like, I think they'll see it as like a good sign. I had like a good gut feeling. So I asked, and they were like, 100%, we are super passionate about you joining our team. We've talked to everybody else, and we are willing to pay you this much plus like an annual bonus of this much, which ended up being more than what I was looking for at all. And they were like, I hope that this will work. Please let us know. Like, yep, that'll work.
That is so great. I mean, especially when you ask for more money and the company says, yeah, and they meet or exceed your expectations, it really makes you feel like that's where you're supposed to be. Like, they value me. They really do want me. Whereas if you go to try and negotiate and they're like, and I've had that experience where we're like, nope, this is what you're making. I'm like, but I'm way overqualified. They're like, nope, this is what you're making. I'm like, well, how about a signing bonus? Nope. What about more vacation? Nope. And like, once you go through that, you're like, mm-hmm. They don't really want me. They're not really serious. And so I'm glad to hear that you had such a positive experience with them meeting and exceeding your expectations.
It was seriously so great. And then I've started working there since I accepted the position, I think October 26th. And it has been like the most rewarding position that I've ever been in. It feels like exactly where I'm supposed to be. I was having a really hard time being in LA. I hadn't felt like I had met like my people, which was really hard because I'm such a
people-oriented
person. Like, I really, yeah. And I have great friends in LA, but I just, mm-hmm. They don't feel like home yet, you know? And the people that I work with, like, immediately I felt like I'm supposed to be around you. The company is so hippy-dippy and spiritual, which is like right up my alley. I had to like set my intentions for my role when we started, and like the CEO is super hands-on. Like, he told me like he feels like where I'm supposed to be, and like he reaches out and like sends me emails and is like, I hope you're thriving today, Taylor. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I am thriving today. Thank you so much. And like, it just feels right. And it's like the first thing that's felt right about LA since I've moved there. And I just am so glad that I didn't give up on it. And like, I'm glad that I kind of, there was something always pulling me back, because like I still was interviewing for this job in LA, and like I was asking for more money. Like, so I knew there was a part of me that was like, mm-hmm. would stay if I felt like it was right. And the more that like I've worked at this company, I've been here for like, I guess coming up on like 4 months now, I just feel like I'm really good at my job. And I feel like the people I work with are really good, and everybody is like really passionate about what they do and about like helping each other grow. It feels so like, I'm so glad that I didn't give up when I did, because I would have never gotten this experience, and I wouldn't have met all of these great people who like now I consider some of my best friends and coworkers. So that's great. Like, I love going to work.
That's great. I mean, you can't see it obviously, but my smile is so big right now hearing you tell that story, and how like you finally feel at home in LA is great. I mean, having lived out of state myself, I realize how difficult that can be and how kind of lonely it can be, even if you have people around you and like people that you know. But if someplace doesn't feel like home, how it doesn't feel right. It feels uncomfortable. So I'm so glad that you're able to find that. And I like that the CEO is so involved with you. I think that's small businesses is like everybody knows everybody.
It is. It's so great. It's a startup company, and it's in influencer marketing and like campaign management, which is like right up my alley as far as like the integrated media marketing goes. Like,
It is so cool. And so we work with like YouTubers and influencers and bloggers and even like podcasters and stuff. And we work with brands who want to sponsor different influencers, and we'll cast. So if you see like a sponsored post on YouTube, we like probably have casted those like with the influencers. And it's just something I'm so interested in, which makes like going to work fun and exciting. And I can tell like I'm in the right place because I keep feeling like rewarded by what I do. Like not only with like how I feel at the end of the day, but like my coworkers are like consistently like, you did a great job, or like so nice. And like our like test like gifts, like I've gotten emails from like management companies and stuff being like, thank you so much for working with us. Like, we really love working with you. And like, it really just makes you feel like you're where you're supposed to be when like going to work feels good, and like the people, like hanging out with the people around you and like your clients and like everybody around you, just it feels so rewarding. I don't even know how else to say it, but and I just feel like a cool job that's like doing really well, and I'm consistently busy and I'm around good people, so like LA finally feels really good. And I'm sad that I was so ready to leave, because now I'm like, well, now I have to stay there for like ever. I can't leave this job.
Well, I love that you finally found a place where you feel at home. And while I obviously wish you were closer, I'm definitely going to have to visit you out in LA, because why not take advantage of the opportunity to visit you and see a cool new place?
Yes, you have to.
One of the cool things about your story is, you know, as you kind of went through and like, this would happen or that would happen, and you know, it kind of felt like the universe was like kind of pulling you in a different direction or pulling you back home. It seemed like there was always something pulling you back to LA, kind of pulling you back to where you felt like you belonged. And then now, having been out in LA for, let's see, October of 2019, so it's been what, 16 months, like you finally are like, ah, this is what I've been working toward. This is what it was like, all my sacrifice and everything, this is what it led to.
Yes, exactly. I feel like for so long, I thought the universe was like telling me there. Mm-hmm. More. I think it just mostly meant I was supposed to like work harder to stay. Mm-hmm. So I'm really glad that I ended up doing that. And ended up finding what feels really good right now. And like, hopefully will continue to feel really good. And like, I'm supposed to be there, but if it doesn't eventually, then I guess I just keep working and over for, and you will definitely have to come visit, and you can bring Trevor, because the last time he came, he thing because everything started locking down.
Well, and he and I need to do another vacation together, because our last one lasted all of 2 hours. So
and we somehow definitely... that boy still came home looking like a lobster. I have never seen someone so sunburnt for being on the beach, not even 2 hours.
The sad thing was we used a lot of sunscreen too, to be honest with you. I mean,
okay, I could see where you put the sunscreen on, and Ethan, I don't know what you did to his back, but I was like, it was very streaky. I was like, Trevor, what did you guys do?
Well, I will blame it on the spray bottle. We bought spray sunscreen. So for everybody listening, don't have me apply your sunscreen. Or
I don't know. I think it's halfway Trevor's fault. That boy can get burnt so easily. But yes, you guys have to redeem your vacation. And luckily LA doesn't get hot enough or sunny enough for Trevor to burn that badly.
So as we're about to wrap up here, what sort of advice would you give if somebody who is sitting in your shoes, you know, 18 months ago, whether they're looking at going away to college or going away for a job or just doing what you did and saying, you know what, this place is where I need to be to fulfill my dreams. I'm going to go for it. What would you tell them right now?
Oh, my gosh. I don't know. I feel like if you want something, you have to really go for it. But you have to understand that like it might take hard work and it might not always be super easy or super fun. And you really have to sit there and kind of like pros and cons it, like, is it like is it worth it? And most of the time, like, it is. I'm a really big pros and cons lister. And, like, I thought for a long time, like, I'm just not supposed to be in LA. But, like, I couldn't figure out why I was thinking that. I think it was just hard. But, like, sometimes hard things are super worth it. So if it's something that you really want, you should go for it. You're going to have good days and you're going to have bad days. But you shouldn't fight the universe, because if it's something you want, then it's probably something that you're supposed to be doing. So I think you just have to trust yourself, trust the universe, trust whatever higher being that you believe in, and just really go for it, put the work in, and know that you will probably be rewarded if you do so.
I think that's great advice. So before hanging up, is there anything that you want, any shameless plug, anything you got going on, any big project or anything that you just want to, like, throw out there and be like, I'm awesome, check me out?
Nope.
Okay, that's fine.
I don't think I'm doing anything exciting right now, other than working, but if I do, I'll keep you posted and you can shamelessly plug it somewhere else.
Okay, that sounds great. I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me so much. I always love listening to your stories, whether it's at Thanksgiving or Christmas or through a podcast, and you are always welcome back. We can always find something to talk about, I'm certain.
I am certain too. I'm sure something will come up soon.
Cool. Well, thank you so much. I wish you continued success out in LA.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on the first podcast. I feel so special.
Well, I mean, you saved me, because I texted you last night and was like, hey, are you free tomorrow? Let's do the podcast. But I mean, I was so nervous getting started, and what better person to do your first podcast with than your cousin and just have like a chill, laid back conversation.
Exactly. I'm happy to be here. I think it went really well, and I'm proud of you for starting this podcast. So I'm excited to listen to the next guests, who will probably be way better at podcasting than me. And I feel like you're going to do great at this. This was a great first podcast, I think.
No, all of my friends are nervous to do it. Most of them I contacted, like, yeah, it'll be fun. And then they're like, oh, I'm so afraid. And it's, some of it for me is fun to listen to people that, like, I admire for one reason or another, who've achieved, you know, so many things. I mean, a lot of people coming up on the podcast I know from grad school. And so they're physicians or researchers, yeah, or whatever. And so to hear them, these people give talks to scientists all the time and things, and to hear them just get nervous about the thought of talking to themselves, you know, it's just humbling for me to look at somebody who, you know, people who've achieved so much like yourself and overcome so much, and then to hear them, like, have to tell their story, and they're like, ooh, I don't think so. Or, you know, I can't tell you the number of people who've been like, I don't think I'm successful or I've achieved that much. And I'm just like, are you kidding me? Kind of like yourself. Like, I think when you're in the thing and you're doing something, you don't feel like it's that big of a deal, because you're like, well, if I'm doing it, anybody can do it. And so it takes kind of like that step back and somebody looking from the outside in to be like, no, what you're doing is cool. Like, there are tons of people who want to do what you do. You are inspirational. You are achieving a lot. And people just don't realize that. So hopefully through the podcast, you were able to reflect and be like, you know what? I am doing some pretty cool stuff out in LA.
I think when you asked me, I was like, well, I don't really have that much to say. But if you really think about it, doing anything that was hard or scary or new, or like something you've never done before, is such an achievement, like, in itself. And I think people compare themselves to, like, such giant achievements, like thinking about the people you might have on this in the future who are, like, people, like, scientists, which I am very, very much not. It's like, well, their achievements are so much greater, but, like, who gets to, you know, choose what achievement is so great? I think any achievement, mm-hmm, big or small, is just something to be super proud of. So I hope all of your friends see that and want to come on this podcast after listening to mine and know that, you know, they've probably done so, so much more than me, and they should talk about it, because I want to hear it. So you guys should come on the podcast.
They definitely will listen. I've had a few people who are like, oh yeah, like I want to listen to some of the podcasts you've done already. And I'm like, well, I haven't done any. So when I get one, I'll let you know. So yours is the guinea pig that people will listen to go, okay, this is what the podcast will be. And I'm so excited for that. I was so excited to do this one. I mean, people who obviously might not know us very personally or whatever, Taylor has the best stories at Thanksgiving and Christmas, always. They're the best stories. That's why I was so excited to have her on, because I knew that she would be able to tell great stories. She's very personable. She is a social butterfly. And thank you so much.
No problem. I'm sorry most of my great stories didn't fit into my achievements, but if you ever need like a podcast full of embarrassing things I've done, I have all of the stories ready to go.
You know, that's an interesting idea. I can have people on to talk about like their achievements and overcoming things. And then later I can have them come on and talk about embarrassing things or things that they failed out of before achieving. Because everybody knows whenever you put yourself out there, whenever you're trying to achieve a goal or a dream or something, there are always those times where you fall a little flat. Something doesn't go quite right. I had a meeting the other day and there was somebody from the CDC on. I went to share my screen and I was muted and nothing would pull up. My PowerPoint wouldn't pull up. The webcam wouldn't pull up. Nothing would pull up. I had to restart my computer. And then when I restarted my computer, it started updating.
So, oh my gosh, I hate when that happens.
So it was fantastic. So we can definitely do something like that too.
Trust me, I have a ton of those stories for you, because I might be okay at storytelling, but it comes from a lot of awkward encounters that make all of the good stories. So you just let me know when you need to talk about my failures and I am ready to go.
All righty. Well, I will let you go for the rest of the day, and thank you again so much.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
All right. Bye.
Bye.